Welcome to Film Forum's podcast. The following event was recorded on July 29th, live at our theaters located at 209 West Houston Street in Manhattan.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Film Forum. My name is Mike Maggiore. I do the programming of the premieres with Karen Cooper. And it's my great pleasure to welcome you to the U.S. theatrical premiere of Hieronymus Bosch, Touched by the Devil, directed by Peter Van Heuste. For decades now, Peter Van Heuste has produced some of the richest and most innovative documentaries in the world, in my opinion. He has worked on a number of films with the great Dutch filmmakers Hedy Honigman and Johan van der Kuiken, to name just two. And I'm proud to say that we have opened a number of films that Peter has produced over the years, most recently the new Rijksmuseum and Hedy Honigman's O Amor Natural, which was one of my favorite documentaries ever, and the Underground Orchestra, to name just a couple. This is very exciting to see Peter go into directing, and Hieronymus Bosch, Touched by the Devil, is a fascinating look at a group of Bosch experts, or you could call them Bosch chasers, who travel the globe in preparation for an exhibition on the 500th anniversary of his death, which is this year. And not only are they to determine if the paintings are genuine works by the artists, they're also contending with red tape, egos, and conflicting interests of art institutions. But they're also quite possibly finding a newly discovered Bosch work, which is really thrilling to watch. This is also really a privileged close-up viewing of Bosch's work. And I think this is invaluable because his work was so minutely designed and so perverse in the details, it really benefits from the kind of microscopic treatment you're going to see now. We're also very tonight, Dr. Marianne Ainsworth, curator for European painting at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. She's going to join Peter for the Q&A after the film, and it's really a privilege because, and I hope she doesn't mind that I say this, but I understand that she's one of the foremost experts on Bosch in the world. So would you join me now, please, in welcoming Peter Van Heuste.
Well, I have little to say. I'm very honored that the film is playing here. I mean, you have to imagine that I was 15, I think, when I first organized a film evening on the high school. And now I feel the thrill. It is a joy in my life. I cannot otherwise saying it's a gift in my life that I can show a film here. And I want to thank the Film Forum because they are the top in the world. You can't imagine because they are very, how do you say that, film lovers. That's what I only can say. So thank you for coming here and hope to see you afterwards. Thank you.
Please welcome Peter Van Heuste and Dr. Marianne Ainsworth. So, Peter, I feel like the first question that I have for you, having known the films that you've produced, is why did you decide to direct this one?
Well, when I met a group of researchers and they allowed me to step in their research, and that's a big thing because they allowed me to all the doubts and discussions, and that's not normal. And once they did, I thought of myself, so I can travel with them and see all the paintings in the museums close up myself. I'm a child, so you probably have a too. You know, if somebody's not looking, you want to touch the painting. Well, sometimes they were on lunch, and then you do, you know, and you feel. So that was my main reason.
You wanted to touch the Bosch paintings.
Well, why not, you know? No, but it gave me the idea that you can make a good film if they allowed you to be close to that painting. You see the real thing. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that can communicate. And that's what film normally is. And, of course, then it took us 5 years because the research took 5 years. Right. So 90 minutes took 5 years.
Right. You started shooting in 2010?
2011, yeah.
11, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I'd be very curious to hear what's happened since you finish shooting, because these two exhibitions, one of which the Den Bosch exhibition closed just in May, correct?
Yeah.
And the Prado is on is now on until mid-September, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Both exhibitions had a great deal of press coverage in this country, and one of the stories that came out was that there were two paintings that I believe the Prado rescinded Den Bosch show. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, it was like this. Of course, you see on the camera, they say which paintings they think they are not from Jeronimus Bosch. Yeah. But they forgot, or they didn't do, or it is not a habit. I don't know. But they didn't told the museum itself. So then the film was ready, and we showed it for the press. And from that moment on, the Prado saw it. So they were not happy, because they felt it as perhaps as impolite, or I don't know. And then they said, well, if you're saying those paintings are not of Jeronimus Bosch, then we don't lend them to you for your exhibition. And so it became a lot of hustle. And I feel very sorry about this, because, well, Miriam knows this. I mean, they're all passionate people. And next, Mrs. Pilar from the Prado. I like her so much, because she has such a good look. And in a way, I mean, Dutch people can be sometimes a little bit direct. Let's put it this way. We are not the most polite people. And Spanish people has another attitude in this one. So it beats, or how do I say that? And but most people, you know, people, they're all art lovers, and then they sometimes goes wrong.
Well, I think you should indicate that in many of the scenes in the film, because they're all very polite to each other, and there's a certain respect, but there's also protectiveness there, obviously. Yeah. I'm curious, Dr. Ainsworth, about the Metropolitan's holdings. I know that you have one Bosch painting, is that correct?
Yes, we have the Adoration of the Magi, which is the earliest known Bosch painting, around 1475.
Oh, wow. And do you also have some paintings by followers of Bosch?
Yes, we have. In fact, perhaps even more popular than our Adoration of the Magi is a wonderful Helsing, but that's by a follower of Bosch. Mm-hmm. And if you go into the room where they both hang, or they used to hang together, you see more in front of the follower of Bosch than actually the one by Bosch.
Right. That looks more like, it seems like audiences tend to be drawn to the darker paintings.
Well, the Helsings are very, very, you know, exciting for people, and they have so many wonderful details, and they really draw a crowd. Yeah.
Okay, I want to turn it over to the audience. If you have a question, Sam will pass the microphone around. There's one right here. If you could just wait for the mic to come over.
In Madrid, they gave the underdrawing in the exhibition, the huge underdrawing for the Garden of Earthly Delights. Was that by the team from...
Actually, that wasn't the underdrawing. That was the X-radiograph.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was that taken by the Prado, or...?
Yes. That was their research.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Understood. We were not invited at that moment. Otherwise, we had filmed it when they made it, but it was not like that.
Right. Right here. You can...
Bosch art is very suggestive of the visions produced in altered states of consciousness. And I'm wondering, is there any historical evidence that artists in this area had access to psychoactives that would have produced such visions, or secret societies?
I always thought he was on LSD myself. But we have no proof of that. But it's such an incredibly inventive mind. I mean, the only other one who I think even comes close to it is Grunewald. You know, with the great altarpiece there in Colmar. It's a mind that really comes out of nowhere. And so it's very hard for us to really explain it.
Does the symbolism that he used seem suggestive of Rosicrucianism or any secret societies that were active in that area?
The symbolism actually isn't all that novel. It's just the... inventive way that he puts together the figures, extraordinarily inventive way. But you'll find very similar, if you took individual motifs out, find similar things in other paintings, and the same kind of relationship to texts of the time that were devotional texts. So individually speaking, they're not really that unusual. It's just the inventive nature of the way he put it all together that is so extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right here. If you could just wait for the if you could just wait for the mic, I'm sorry, so everyone can hear. Thanks.
So in terms of Basch's personality in the film, there is a question whether he was a scholar, because there was that one shot where we see the Latin text. And there's very little evidence that that was the case. I mean, we don't have many records of his life other than tax records and marriage certificates. But, you know, in terms of scholars of the day or writers, I mean, is there any known evidence that he had peers or anything like that?
Well, normally speaking, artists of this time had advisors who would be part of the court life, or clerics in the church, or depending on who commissioned the work, would often have someone who would be advising in terms of the theological content and also the particular text that would be related. So, in fact, that's often a question that's raised about many art. Is another good example, but we have no evidence that they were trained in that way. And after all, if you think about how artists were trained in the, in a very strict guild system, this was not part of their training. And so it's more likely than not that he actually was not, didn't know Latin or wasn't really trained in the humanities.
Yes, on the aisle right there, behind the pillar.
Hi. Actually, I'm very, very curious. It looks like they worked for years very good together, and I'm really curious what's going with them now. What is their next mission?
I think they don't want to talk to each other for a while.
Well, the Dutch.
No, actually, they're very they get along really well. Yeah.
They get along really well, and you have to know that Matthijs Ilsink, the main character, was the student of Jos Kolderweij, who was the professor. So, and then they joined in this team. But I think Ron Spronk is joining a team for On de Breugel, what will be celebrated in 2019. And at least they invited me to have a close look also at the paintings to see if we could make a film about it. But I said immediately, it will not a film like this. So they don't have to be afraid for me.
Actually, I think there's great interest in continuing the project, as far as I understand it from the team, to look at more of the works outside of the core works of Basch, look at the workshop pieces or those that were painted after Basch's time. You know, there was a huge interest in his works, and Guevara, who was a writer and collector at the time connected with the court, wrote afterwards that there were so many that were made that there were many fakes and forgeries shortly after Basch's time. And he writes about how they were, the paintings were smoked to give them that kind of grayish tone to make them look more authentic. So it's that group that I think they're interested in researching now, to see how they were made and how far away.
But this is also Rob Erdman, the data specialist, who makes this way of looking, became head of the data specialist of the New Rijksmuseum. And with him, he showed me how he's investigating, for instance, the structure of the paint of Van Gogh, Vincent van Gogh. And here the paint is very flat. But of course, Van Gogh was very, put the painting on like that. So they're like a wave. And he's able now, on the square centimeters, that you dive nearly as a camera underneath the paint. And of course, as a filmmaker, I'm interested in that to see, because you totally new experience of this paint. You feel his he made paintings in 1 hour. I mean, so that's a way to come closer to an artist without sitting a different thing. But they're all busy with kinds of projects, I think, and very good projects now. And they are open very much for an audience now. It used to be very protective. And
yes, they will have an open website with all of their material on it, so anyone can look at the material and think about it, zoom in on the images, and all the underdrawings, the X-ray graphs, etc., the close details. In fact, I'm astonished that you could whittle down thousands of hours of film to an hour and a half. but I think, you know, on this website, which is not available yet, it will be soon, that anyone can access material.
You can. We also did an interactive video, what you would say, and then you can go. We have the painting, the Garden of Delight. We have the most highest resolution possible. And try to keep in mind that this is like a Google Maps. So let's say you compare the painting like the city of New York. So you go into it, to very little details, to square centimeters. The resolution stays very strong. So you see really the brush. Then you can swipe it. And we put nearly more than 100 sounds behind it. So, of course, that's an interpretation of me. So you hear the sounds, and it is like if you find Easter eggs in the garden, where's an egg, and you go it. And the moment you want to know more about it, because there are a lot of symbols and meanings or interpretations, you can tap it, and then you hear an explanation, or you can read it. And we had in 10 days more than a million unique hits all around the world. So and people stay there for 10, 20 minutes. So
and what is this website? What is the URL?
Well, we wrote the original title is Geronimus Bosch with GH. Well, so now it is still GH, Geronimus Bosch .nl. And we are now changing it immediately also to .com and written as it is here, Hieronymus Bosch with an H. But you will certainly find it. And
I think we have time for just a couple more.
You sort of partially answered this with the previous question, but I'm interested to know, who were these paintings made for? Was there a patron relationship? How were they sold, distributed, or whatever? And also, how did Philip II get hold of them all?
Yes, and there aren't really so many that are considered to be by Bosch himself, a dozen, 21 or so. And yes, the major ones would have been commissioned. We know who some of those people were. Count of Nassau, for example, in Brussels, hung the Garden of Earthly Delights in his house. Philip II got most of them by acquiring them from the Netherlands and bringing them to the Escorial or to Spain, and that's why the Prado has ended up being such a rich collection of these works. I don't know who some of the other major works were, who commissioned those. We don't know who commissioned the Heywayne Triptych, for example. But there are many smaller works that would have been produced for open market sale. And those would have been made mostly by his workshop and certainly later by followers of Bosch after his death that were sold on the open market, mostly in Antwerp, where there was which was really the economic center of Europe at the time and a great place for selling artworks.
And just one more, this one on the aisle here.
Thank you. Interested in hearing what kind of pushback have you gotten from people who are heavily invested in money and collections who may not be so so friendly of the work that you have done.
I
that's your question, I think.
Yeah, but I don't. Did I get feedback of no?
Pushback. Kickback. Push.
People, another criticism.
People weren't happy about the results of the team, but that's not your problem.
Well, no, it's not my problem. I tried to be a filmmaker. And and as a filmmaker, as a documentary maker, I want to get to stepping a world that's normally not visible. And And again, I want to say this, and that's always how I start when we have a premiere. First, thank you for allowing me to, that I can step in your world, and that they gave me the trust. But at the end, I have to do it in my own way. So, yeah, I will not say I don't care, but I try to otherwise it will influence my way of work if I could hurt somebody's feelings. But perhaps to say this to close the thing, when we did this interactive, you can see who's reacting in the world. Who will, nowadays, that's with data. For instance, you have a very big community in Brazil who reacted, more than 50,000 people. And then we found out also that in Moscow, there's a lot of people looking at Geronimus Bosch. And I was invited there to present the film. And within nearly a week, 10 sold out in cinemas, more than 1,000 people, the old Russian kind of cinemas. So I was not aware of that. And that's what why I'm doing it, you know, just to present a world which we didn't know before. I don't know if that's an answer in your question, but...
And you did it beautifully. Thanks so much for coming, Peter. And thank you, Dr. Ainsworth, for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Film Forum's podcast. Visit us online at filmforum.org, where you can learn more about our films, memberships, subscribe to our free weekly e-newsletter, and to find out the ways you can support our nonprofit cinema. And if you have the time, please visit our iTunes page and leave a rating and review of our podcasts. Copyright to this program belongs to The Moving Image Incorporated.